We're studying the Gospel of Luke, and we're trying to look at it through the lens of a very particular question. And that question is this: what does it mean for us to join in the message and in the mission of Jesus? Now, in order to answer that question, we really have to answer or address three smaller questions. Who is Jesus? What does he teach? And what does he do? We have to answer this question, who is Jesus? Because who he is explains why it is that we should follow him. As we read through the Bible, one of the things that becomes very clear, that the Bible makes very clear, is that Jesus is Messiah. He's that rescuer that was talked about in this story that we just read to the children. The rescuer that God had promised to send one day. The rescuer who was going to come and fix everything that is broken in this world. But the Bible also shows us that Jesus is more than just Messiah. So much more. The Bible shows us that he is also God himself. He is God who came to us. God who put on human flesh. And because that is who Jesus is, that is why we follow him. Well, we also need to know what it is that Jesus teaches. Because if we're going to join him in his message, we need to know what that message is in order to teach him. And so we have been learning that as we look at Luke's gospel. But if we're going to join him in his mission, we need to know what it is that Jesus did and does, so that we also can do those same things and join him in that mission. Well, as we've been learning this over these last weeks and months, one of the things that we have discovered, or one of the things that we have learned that Jesus did, is Jesus drew people to himself. And since that is something that Jesus did, if we are going to follow him and join him in that mission, we also need to be involved in drawing people to Jesus. And so this morning, Jesus is going to teach us three things that we need to realize and that we need to do if we are going to be effective in drawing people to him. Three things that we need to accept and practice if we are going to successfully and in winsomely ways bring people closer to Jesus. What we're going to look at this morning is what Jesus first taught to his disciples. And he taught this to his disciples because he wanted them to join him in that mission of drawing people closer to him. So if you would, turn with me to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6. If you don't have a Bible with you or a Bible app on your phone or tablet, you can use one of the red Bibles, and I believe that it's on page 1603 or thereabouts. Luke chapter 6. Well, the first thing that we need to do in order to draw people to Jesus is we need to realize that God treats us according to how we treat others. As the disciples were gathered around Jesus and he's teaching them, Jesus told them that how they treat others shapes how God treats them. Look at verse 37 there in Luke chapter 6. This is Jesus speaking to his disciples. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure that you use, it will be measured to you. So Jesus is saying here to his disciples, treat other people according to how it is that you want God to treat you. Then he goes on to describe the two general ways that we treat people. We either do it with judgment and condemnation, or we do it with forgiveness and generosity. Now, when Jesus says here, don't judge or do not condemn, what Jesus is talking about here is having a judgmental and condemning attitude towards others. Okay? It's that kind of attitude that notices and remembers people's failures and faults much more than their successes and strengths. It's that person who always has something negative to say about others. They're that person who is impossible to please because there's always something that just isn't quite right, or there's always something that just isn't good enough. And Jesus warns his disciples, if this is the kind of attitude that you have about other people, then this is the kind of attitude that God has towards you. To the extent that you are critical of others, God is going to be critical of you because of that attitude. Now, we have to understand that what Jesus is not doing here is he's not telling his disciples to never practice discernment or to never make a judgment about something. That's not what he's saying. In fact, in just a few minutes, we're going to actually see that Jesus gives them instructions about the right way to do this. But what Jesus is warning his disciples about here is towards having that judgmental and condemning attitude that we can sometimes develop about others. But he goes on and he says to his disciples, he says to them, you know, if on the other hand you are quick to forgive and you are generous towards others, then God is going to be forgiving and generous towards you as well. Now, a forgiving person is not somebody who pretends that nothing ever happened. Okay? There's a word for that. That's forgetting. Forgiving and forgetting are not the same thing. Forgiving means that a person is released from the debt or the harm that they caused you. It doesn't make that cost disappear. What it means is that the forgiving person has decided to absorb that cost themselves and no longer hold it against the person who has caused them that harm or that offense. So, for example, when I'm plowing my driveway up in Kodiak, Alaska, where we used to live, where it snows, and I'm plowing my driveway with my four-wheeler, and I slide on the ice, and I run the four-wheeler, the plow that's on the four-wheeler, right into the door of my in-law's almost brand-new vehicle and scratch it and dent it. And my father-in-law, actually it was really my mother-in-law, it was her car, she forgives me for doing that. The cost of that dent doesn't just disappear. Instead of them making me pay for it, they absorb that cost when they go to sell that vehicle a little while later and have to, you know, absorb the cost of selling a vehicle with a dented door. The dent doesn't go away, but they absorb that cost in forgiving me. Then to teach his disciples about generosity, Jesus uses an illustration from the marketplace, that would have taken place in each of the communities that they were a part of, a picture that they would have been very familiar with. And I was, in one of the books that I was reading this last week about that, there was a great description of what Jesus has in mind here. And the author, in describing it, describes it this way. He says that the seller, the person selling there in the marketplace, would crouch on the ground. And this is when you were buying corn or some sort of grain from them. The seller would crouch on the ground with the measure, think of a clay pot, there between his legs. And the first thing that he would do is he would fill that measure 3/4 full of grain. And then he'd give it a good shake. And he'd kind of twist it round and round, trying to get everything to settle down as deeply as it could into that measure. And then he'd pour some more grain in there until it was up to the top, and he'd give it another shake and kind of shake it around and around again, just trying to get everything to settle as deeply as it can in there. And then he would very carefully add some more grain to it, so it formed a cone over the opening, over the top of this measure, this pot that he was using. And he would tap that together, and then occasionally poke his finger right in the very point of that cone that he had formed there so that he could pour a few more grains of corn or of grain into that measure there. And doing this again and again until there simply was not possible to add just another kernel of corn to this measure. And so the person who was buying this grain could see that they were just guaranteed an absolutely full measure, that there was just no way that more could be held. And so what Jesus is, in describing it this way, Jesus is giving his disciples a picture of a person who makes the effort to be more than fair in the business that he or she does. This person is genuinely generous towards others in what they're doing. And Jesus says, when you show that kind of generosity towards others, God is going to show you that kind of generosity as well. Well, Jesus' words to his disciples here are also God's or Jesus' words to us. And so that means that we need to be really intentional and really thoughtful about how it is that we treat other people. Because not only does our treatment of others affect how likely it is that we're going to be able to draw them closer to Jesus, but how we treat others actually impacts how God treats us. And so if we are generally judgmental and condemning towards others, it is going to push people away from Jesus. But it also means that God is going to be judgmental and condemning towards us because we have that attitude. But if on the other hand we are forgiving and generous towards others, I mean, that is going to naturally draw people towards Jesus. And God is going to be forgiving and generous towards us. And so that means that how we treat other people really matters. It affects how winsome we can be in drawing others towards Jesus. Because if their experience with us is an experience that is just full of grace, then they are going to want to draw closer to the one who is full of grace. And as that happens, we too will experience an extra measure of grace from God. Well, the second thing that we need to do in order to draw people to Jesus is that we need to remain humble and responsive toward Jesus. Jesus here uses a parable to teach his disciples that it is important for them to remain humble and responsive to everything that it is that he is teaching them. Look at verse 39. He, Jesus, told them, the disciples, this parable. Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into a pit? The student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher. Jesus is making two points here. The first is that when those who are leading are blind, it ends in disaster for everybody. Spiritually blind people who are trying to lead other people who need spiritual leadership are going to make a mess of things. Now, the blind people that Jesus has in mind here are probably the Pharisees. Not being able to see or understand where they're going themselves, they are leading the people into dangerous places. They have, at this point, by this point in Luke's gospel, they are basically rejecting Jesus, and in doing so, they're showing that they do not really understand the heart and the mind of God, even though they think they do. And as Israel's spiritual leaders, they are now blindly leading people in the wrong direction because they're trying to lead them away from Jesus. But as Jesus gives this warning, I suspect that he also intends this to be a warning to his disciples, especially to the 12 that he has recently elevated to the position of apostles. This is a group of 12 people who are being prepared for the special responsibility of establishing and leading the early church. But that doesn't mean that they still don't have a ton to learn from Jesus as they prepare for that responsibility. And that gets at Jesus' second point here, and that is that a student is never greater than their teacher. And a student who learns from their teacher becomes like their teacher. So in other words, to the extent that they remain humble and responsive to Jesus, the disciples are going to become more and more like Jesus. Now, remaining humble and responsive to Jesus means that they are going to listen and to obey the broad commands that Jesus gives to them. Commands like love your enemies. But being humble and responsive to Jesus also means that they're going to be obedient to him when he gives them very specific instructions that are for specific times and places, like when Jesus comes to Peter and says, try throwing your net out on the other side of the boat. Now, if you know much about the disciples, you realize or you know full well that they didn't get to be good at this right away. But these disciples did learn to be humble and responsive to Jesus. And Jesus used them to turn the world upside down. Hundreds, thousands, millions of people were drawn to Jesus because they were humble and responsive to Jesus in what they did. Well, like the disciples, if we're going to draw others to Jesus, we need to remain humble and responsive to him. What's so ironic is that new believers get this, typically. They really understand this. A new believer knows that they still have a ton to learn from Jesus, and so they tend to remain open and excited and responsive to Jesus. And it's why oftentimes it's the new believers who are most effective at drawing other people to Jesus. Sadly, this humility and this responsiveness to Jesus is something that too often fades in us over time. We kind of settle into life as a believer and we start acting like we've all got it all figured out. We think we've got a handle on what's right and wrong. And we start going through the motions rather than really listening to what Jesus is saying to us. And I think that is the reason why we're tempted to keep reading our book, even though Jesus has prompted us to talk to that person who's sitting next to us on that airplane. It's the reason why we stick to our friends, even when Jesus has prompted us to go over and meet and show hospitality to that new person in the church. I've been a believer for more than 35 years. I've been to seminary. I know a fair bit of theology. And I know how real this temptation can be. But the truth of it is that regardless of all my training, regardless of all the years that I have spent following Jesus, I still have so much to learn from him. And I need to remain humble and responsive to him if I'm going to be effective in drawing other people to him. For any of us to be effective in drawing others to Jesus, we need to remain humble and responsive to Jesus. The third thing that Jesus teaches his disciples, that what they need to do in order to draw others to Jesus, he tells us that we need to recognize and address our own brokenness before we try to address the brokenness in others. When a person is drawn to Jesus, one of the things that they eventually have to deal with is their sin. Now, I'm not saying that they need to fix their sin in order to be drawn to Jesus, but they're going to have to acknowledge it. It's just part of coming to him. And so Jesus shows the disciples, his disciples, the right way, the redemptive way to address sin and brokenness in others. And what he tells them is that it begins with them being honest about their own sin. Look at verse 41. Jesus says to his disciples, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Brother, let me take the speck out of your eye,' when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your eye, then you'll be able to see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." So Jesus here is telling his disciples to be honest and to deal with their own brokenness before they try to address the brokenness that's in other people. And Jesus makes this point with a vivid, really absurd illustration here. He's describing somebody who's trying to remove the very smallest flake of wood that somebody else has stuck in their eye, all the while they have this long beam of wood sticking out of their own eye. The word that's translated plank there in the NIV is actually the same word that's used to describe the main beam that would be used to support the roof of a house. It's an absurd illustration. Meant to be absurd, but it makes the point. Jesus is pressing home to his disciples, you cannot effectively address the brokenness in others without also addressing and acknowledging the brokenness that is in your own life. And when you don't do this, when you only focus on the sins of others, you are being a hypocrite. You're being a person who says one thing but does another. But when you're willing to admit your own brokenness and you partner with me in dealing with that in your life, then you're going to be able to really help other people with their sin. Not only will both you and the person that you're trying to help, not only will you see that you are not so different from each other, but that person that you are trying to help is going to get to see what can happen in your life as a person who is also a sinner comes to me and can be transformed. Your life testimony will bring them hope of what can happen if they come and follow me as well. These words that Jesus says to his disciples are also his words to us. And if we're going to take these words seriously, it means that we have to do two things. And the first thing it means is that we have to be honest about the fact that we have sin and brokenness in our lives. Every one of us here has particular sins that we are prone to. Every one of us. Maybe it's in the area of sex or anger or greed or drugs or selfishness or envy or judgmentalism or we could list a ton of things. And it's probably not just one of them. It's probably lots of them. Sin is sin. We all struggle with it. We all have areas of brokenness and weakness in our lives that needs to be dealt with. And denying that doesn't do anyone any good. And it certainly doesn't help us draw people closer to Jesus. In fact, what it almost always does is push them away. The second thing that we need to be honest about is that we are often terribly blind towards our own sin. Part of that is probably familiarity. We've sinned so long and we've sinned so frequently in this particular way that we hardly even notice it anymore. Part of it's self-justification. We try to assuage our guilt by telling ourselves, well, you know what, I'm not really hurting anyone, or lots of people struggle with this, so this actually isn't such a big deal. All right, it's the wrong attitude to have towards sin, towards any sin, but it's what we do. And this sets us up to be hypocrites. people who say one thing but do another. We are naturally eagle-eyed towards the sin of others while simultaneously blind to our own sin. About 20 years ago, I was in North Carolina for a week-long training seminar with an organization called Sun Life. It was at the time, it was a well-known youth ministry training program that served a variety of different denominations, and I had opportunity to participate. Week-long, it was great, good stuff, but in between the sessions, we'd be given breaks to, you know, run to the bathroom or grab something to drink or just take a little bit of a walk, you know, stretch your legs. And during one of these breaks, I got up and walked out of the building through the campus that was there and walked by a group of about 8 people who were standing in a circle talking. And walked right by them, and I had no intention of eavesdropping on their conversation, but I caught just a piece of what they said, and it piqued my interest, and so I stopped. I found an excuse to stop. I don't know if I tied my shoe or what, dropped all my books or something, you know, did something to have an excuse to stop and to just listen to what it was that they were saying, because it was a little hard for me to believe. Several people in the group were going on and on about haircuts. They were disturbed by how long the hair was on some of the men who were in this training session that I had just been a part of. And I'm not talking about the people who were up in front presenting, but these are just people who were attending the session. And they were going on and on about just how shameful it was that some of these men had hair that was, you know, longer than theirs, basically. And it's not that they were just observing that the hair was longer, but, you know, they were being overtly critical about it. Now, as I walked by, the fact that they were commenting on haircuts struck me as a little bit unusual, but that's not what made me stop. That's not what made me incredulous, as silly as I thought what they were saying was. What made me stop is that I'm listening to them talking about this, and everybody's nodding. And 6 out of the 8 people standing in that circle was also smoking a cigarette. So they're griping about long hair in men while they're all standing there smoking together. Now, I don't want to make more of smoking cigarettes than we should. I mean, obviously it's not a good idea. It's certainly addictive. It does harm to our bodies, does harm to others. But the fact that they could stand there and feel so justified in criticizing somebody's hairstyle while they are standing there puffing away on their cigarettes was almost too much for me to believe. Or maybe it isn't. And maybe it's why Jesus has to say to his disciples, "Take the plank out of your own eye before you point to that bit of sawdust in the other person's eye." Jesus has called all of us to follow him, to teach what he taught, to do what he did. And one of the things that he did was draw other people to himself. And we are to join him in doing that, in drawing other people to Jesus. And Jesus shows us how to do that. He teaches us to be forgiving and generous towards others, not to be judgmental and condemning. Because this way they get a taste of what Jesus is like. And so hopefully they'll come back for more. Jesus also reminds us to remain humble and responsive to him. We will always be the student. He will always be the teacher. And we are to be lifelong learners from him. And that means we need to read our Bibles. We need to study the scriptures together, individually. That's how he speaks to us. That's why it's so important that we develop a healthy, ongoing, vibrant prayer life where we are speaking to him. And we are creating space and silence for for him to respond back to us. And he also reminds us that by acknowledging and addressing our own sin, we are then able to deal redemptively with the sins and the brokenness of others. Because when other people can see what Jesus can do with a sinner like me or a sinner like you, it gives them hope of what Jesus can do if and when they begin to follow him as well. And so my prayer for Dayton First Baptist Church is that we would continue to become a people who are known as forgiving and generous to others. That we would continue to become a people who are known as being responsive to Jesus. And that we would continue to become a people who are known for being open and honest about our own sin and brokenness, so that we can be redemptive in how we help others address their sin and brokenness as we draw them to Jesus. Let me pray.